Happy New Year, everybody. Happy 2014. My name is Ari Shaffir, and I run a podcast called The Skeptic Tank. And as a thank you for all the people who listened over the years that I've been doing this, I think about 3 years, I am presenting you with a present. It is my CD, Revenge for the Holocaust, for free. Here it is. I'm going to break in between every track, pretty much, and just tell you a quick factual tidbit about that track. It won't be more than a minute or two each one, and that's it. Just a little extra information in case you already have the CD. It's just a present for you guys, so share it with your friends. Let them know that this is up here for you. It's free. Free. You just have to download it. And if you like it, consider subscribing to my podcast. It's pretty funny, and it's pretty informational. I think you guys will like it. If you're already subscribed, tell a friend or two. Get them into it. So here we go. This was recorded at the Denver Comedy Works. I hate using the word favorite, but man, it's one of my favorite rooms in the world. And if I had to narrow it down to one, it probably would be the one. But that is the original room of the Comedy Store. If you're ever in the Denver area and you have a night off, go to the downtown Denver Comedy Works. There's another one they open like in a rich part of town. That one's good, but it ain't like the downtown one. The downtown one is just amazing. All the seats are like bolted down and stuck right next to each other. The ceiling is low and the seats go all the way up against the wall. So the laughs just reverberate and you just kill all the time. Oh, it really doesn't even matter who's playing. Just go. I mean, they get top shelf comedians all the time. I'm sure they have like, 4 or 5 weeks where it's like a so-so guy. But even for the so-so guy, it'll still be a great time because it's a great fucking club. So here we go. As a present to you guys, for free, my first recording. I guess I did one for Down and Dirty on HBO for Jim Norton. And I did one little short set on Mexican television for CTV, SITV. But this is what I did on my own with no input from anyone else. Nobody telling me you can or can't do anything. So please enjoy it. Ari Shaffir's Revenge for the Holocaust. Here it is. First note, first quick tidbit. The MC didn't get my name right. Goddamn well knew I was recording a CD and just sort of guessed at my name. Just ask the fucking name. Just say Shaffir. Don't drop off the H.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir.
Fuck yeah. All right, this is the crowd. I can already tell.
Yeah. Okay, when I said this is the crowd, I can already tell it's because I recorded 3 sets on a Saturday night. I think in May of 2012, I think that's when it was. Maybe I released it in May of 2012. That could be. I might have recorded it in February or March. But so I recorded 3 sets that night. The first one was like so-so, full of old people. And then the second crowd was the crowd I got most of the audio from. I cut in a thing here or there if I messed up a word or a phrase. But the second crowd was, and I could tell from the claps and the applause to begin with. I'm like, oh, they're ready to go. I'm going to almost use this entire set. All right, back to the album.
I love it. All right, relax. I'm not that good. If you're wondering if I look Jewier than normal, that is not your imagination. I grew a beard. Before I had the beard, all my friends were like, you look the Jewiest possible. You can't, and then I grew the beard. They were like, oh, we were wrong. You split the atom. I have no idea how you did it.
That was just something I was doing for like 3 weeks before the show started a bit. It was just like, some stupid joke about my beard. I wanted to get comfortable, though, before I started my act. So this and the next thing about black people is just to get into my first bit that I prepared, which is the elevator racism, which was like track 4, I think. I called some of these unsellable segues because I used them for segues, and then I didn't want to, put those on a track that might be played on the radio or something. I thought myself would be played on the radio, so I want to take the segue part out of it and just show the actual bits. For a lot of these too, I split them up. Even though it's one bit and sometimes 10, 12 minutes, I split them up into like 2 or 3 bits because I was thinking about getting them played on the radio. But who cares? Just splitting up of tracks. Okay.
It's fun being in Denver. I like how you guys have like four black people in the entire state. I've seen like three black dudes the entire time I've been here. It's fucking weird. What do you do with them all?
All right, so here, this is going to start the first actual bit that I prepared. We're like a minute into the CD, and now we start with my tried material. Enjoy.
Here's the one moment, by the way, that every white guy goes through where they're afraid of being called a racist. It's on an elevator. It's when your wallet is in your back pocket and your hand's at your side. If you're alone and one black guy walks in the elevator, if your arm moves from there to like there, just 1 inch, that's all it takes. Just 1 inch, you're like, fuck. Ooh, that seemed racist. God damn it, hand. Why'd you do that? What are you doing? I never know if I should reach like all the way around, pretend like I'm picking out a wedgie or something. Like, racist? No, I just don't wipe. That's all that's happening here. Please. You can't win sometimes. So here's what I'm going to do from now on. Whenever a black guy walks in the elevator, I just want to pull my wallet out and just start going, no! No! Please! No! Here's my thought process. If I'm gonna get called a racist anyway, I wanna fucking earn it. Let's make this shit count. Plus, he'll have a way better story for his friends later. He'll be like, I saw the most racist thing ever today on an elevator. And I'm like, oh, what? Let me guess. Some white guy touched his wallet. They're like, no, no. So much worse than that. He pulled his wallet out, got into some sort of rape crouch, and started pushing the buttons and screaming in Hebrew. Like, that's a far superior story. This is the rape crouch, by the way. I don't know if you knew what this was. I used to watch a lot of Lifetime television. And whenever you turn the TV on, and someone's already in the shower like this. Like huddled up and looking to the sky. Yeah, you just missed the best scene in the movie.
That bit. Oh, it got me in trouble. With that bit. That was my friend Justin. That's his favorite bit. He loves it. He made me go record a clip of that at the Laugh Factory. It's on their YouTube now, but it's like awful. It's got all these flashes. Somebody's taking pictures. But that's his favorite bit. He goes, that's when I knew you were funny, and he goes, that's when I really started liking you. And then right after that, I guess he started representing me, and man, it changed my life. I mean, among other things, I guess, but. He started getting me booked at clubs. He let me be a real comic after that. So it's not even my favorite bit. I mean, I like it. But, I mean, it's not my favorite one. It's not my hardest fought one. But yeah, that changed my life more than the other ones. It's funny. Every joke, I guess, just reaches people in a different way. Just everybody appreciates whatever they appreciate. It's funny how people, what I used to do when I was starting comedy and watch other comics, you quote, there's certain jokes that you just loved of theirs. And you just kept asking for them. And they'd be like, enough, man. I get it now. It's like, it wasn't their thing they liked. But man, someone else really loves it.
This is just another segue bit. Just something to get into the homelessness.
It's so weird how the weather changes here, like nonstop in Denver. It was like 85 degrees on Thursday. And then next day it was like 50. I went down to 16th Street, which should be renamed just the homeless place. Because... that's your, like, touristy walking area. You just shove all the fucking homeless people in there. So we all just leave thinking, like, people from Colorado are dirty.
16th Street, by the way, it is disgusting. It's just where all the fucking tourists go, and it's where all the homeless go. Same thing happens in Santa Monica with its promenade. It's where the disgustings go. And in New York, actually, at Times Square. All the chuds, they're all there. Just ruining the experience for all the tourists. I can't wait till they do Super Bowl at Times Square because I think they're shutting that down for the Super Bowl experience. All those thieves and criminals are going to be like, we are going to rack up. Back to the CD.
Here's how I feel about the homeless issue. I'm probably like a lot of you. I'm split. Like, half of me thinks, like, oh, those are human beings, and they're suffering, and humans shouldn't suffer like that. And then the other half of me thinks, ew. And that's a real part of you, too. You gotta allow for that. That's real emotions and thoughts. Like, if I'm a homeless guy, you guys sitting on a sidewalk cafe right there, and I'm like, how are you guys doing today? And I see a piece of spit go up in the air. If you lose track of that spittle, you're like, well, we're done with this pizza. I'm not catching homeless on a Wednesday. Let's just go somewhere else. We feel weird. And it's not just us. I think that's nature. And this is why. Have you ever seen a dog around a homeless guy? They go apeshit. It's hilarious. Sweetest, quietest little dog. They'll cuddle up with a baby. You see a homeless guy, they're just like, What the fuck is that thing right there? It smells weird. What is that thing? Nobody trains them how to do that, by the way. They just come like that, factory ready. And you might be like, so? What do dogs know? They're not that smart. Well, what else do they bark at? Fucking earthquakes before they happen, okay? Dogs are smart as shit. And they hate the homeless, and so do we, all right? And that's fine. They make it weird. You ever get out of a 7-Eleven, out of your car in a 7-Eleven, and they all start, like, walking towards you? It's like The Walking Dead all of a sudden. We're like, they're not fast, but they're persistent, so you gotta, like, weave through them. Like, don't touch me, ew. And then, like, ugh. They're tough to avoid, man. I've come with a way to get it done. Here's what if you just want to get it. You can steal this if you want. Whenever a homeless guy comes up to you, you just pull your cell phone out and act like you're talking on it. And for some reason, they go, oh, I'm so sorry. And they just go away. I don't know what it is, but it works. I think it reminds them of our youth or something. But I went into the 7-Eleven, and I was at the counter, and I was looking through the stained glass window. Just the glass window. It'd be great if 7-Eleven started using stained glass windows. Just like shitty taquitos rolling and like stained glass and like angelic flies going overhead and recently expired milk. But I was looking through the window at this homeless guy and I noticed he had a beard like just like mine. And I was looking at him, I was like, weird how we have the same kind of beard. And then I looked closer and I realized he was wearing a members only jacket. It was like a brand new red members only jacket. The kind I've been looking for like 6 goddamn years. And this guy's got one on, and it's spotless. It's, like, brand new. And I'm staring at him, just thinking, where the fuck does a homeless guy get such a sweet jacket? And as I'm looking at him, he just looks up and locks eyes with me through the window. And I'm like, this is gonna be weird. And he stares at me for, like, 4 or 5 seconds, and then he just goes, bleh, and just barfs all over himself. Just unloaded. Didn't even lean forward before he barfed, by the way. He just stayed right there. Like, thinking about the weather. Like, oh, today's 75 degrees. I wonder if tomorrow's going to be any warm. Dude, I need you to react to what just happened, okay? That's important for me as a human. Who doesn't lean forward before you barf? When you're 5, you learn how to do that. When you're 5. At 5 years old, you barf all over yourself and you have this first moment of self-realization. And you're like, this is disgusting what I've done. I'm gross. I'm gross. That's what I am. And then your mom walks by and immediately you notice she has no barf on her. So you're like, hey lady, how you living? And she'll teach you about gravity and how it makes things go straight down every single time. It never doesn't work that way. So if it just little tick up it, short and stout, and just fucking bend over, your barf will all get on the floor and it won't get on your chest. And at five years old, you're like, awesome. Thank you, lady. I will never forget that information. Or at least I won't until I turn homeless and some Jew is staring at me through a window, and I'll barf at him in some sort of weird voodoo ritual to fuck with his day. It was so fucking gross. He didn't wipe it off, too. You would think he'd wipe it off. This is what he did to wipe it off. He took his fingers, his four fingers, opened them wide, tucked his stuff, opened them wide, and just went bloop one time. Just one swipe across the chest. In case you're wondering, that did not get the barf off his chest. If your next question was like, Ari, did that work in getting the barf off his chest? No, it did not. All it did was, it made stripes. It made red and barf-colored stripes all the way down his shirt. He looked like Waldo. If everyone had just stopped looking for Waldo. Just left him there. So I left, and as I left, he started coming towards me. So I get my phone. I'm like, oh, we're not going to do this, right? And I pretend like I'm talking. But then he gets in my way. He goes, can I make a phone call when you're done? Like, you're not prepared for a question like that, ever. And I wanted to say, my brain wanted to just say, like, well played, sir. I mean, I didn't expect that. But you can't say anything, so here's what I came up with on the fly. Because I'm an improviser and an orator. This is what I do for a living. So here's what I thought of like that. He asked about my cell phone, and I said, those are my exact words. I remember it. And I think he could see that I was hesitant. So this is what he actually said to put me at ease. He goes, well, don't worry, man. It's not long distance or anything. Awesome. Thanks, homeless guy. You nailed it. I would have worried about the long distance charges on my cell phone. How long have you been homeless? Time to work on your resume, bro. Too long. Anyway, even if it was, that's not why I'm not going to give it to you. It's you're going to fucking steal it. Or worse, you're going to use it. With your disgusting homeless hand. And bring my phone to your disgusting homeless face. So you can talk to who? Who are you going to call? Whose number do you still know? None of your friends are in my contacts. I guarantee that. And then you finish your call and try to give it back to me. At that point, fucking keep it, dude. I don't want that shit back. I'll just lie. I'll just say Mexicans robbed me. Or something more believable. I loaned my phone to a homeless guy and he got homeless juice all over it. Do you really think Apple's going to cover that? No. They don't cover even dropping the toilet. There's no way they cover homeless juice off a human toilet. I once saw a pregnant homeless lady. Okay, hold on, stop. To hear the air go out of the room. The 30 or so of you who just went like, oh, that was actually the right reaction to have. The rest of you are jaded motherfuckers. And you need to go to church, okay? And I'm Jewish, I don't offer that advice very much. But trust me, you need Jesus in your lives immediately. You're not supposed to be cool with that, okay? You're not supposed to be casual about homeless ladies getting pregnant. There are women taking fertility drugs and timing out their period of the month. This lady, her diet was Doritos and failure. And she gets knocked up? When did God die? That's not supposed to happen. She was like 8 months pregnant, too. She was going to have it. Yeah. And if she had it, I'm assuming she was probably going to fucking eat it. Maybe, right? Maybe. Maybe. I could see her probably eating it. It'd be for a mixture of nutrients and street cred. That's, by the way, that's the most street cred you could ever get in your life. There's no one you could beat up, no one you could kill that would instill fear in people more than that. You could be the biggest fucking gangster on your block. I'm like, hey, I'm going to walk on your side of the street. Because see that lady? She ate her own baby. And that's what I call a wild card. I think what would happen is I think she would have it, and then she would let it dangle there for a while by the umbilical cord.
I'm on your side. None of us think they should get pregnant. We're all on the same side here. Because nobody wants to be pulled up at a red light and just sort of look over and just see a dangling baby in what looks like his first day of gym class. Just fucking crawl his way back into the womb of safety. He came out and realized, oh, fuck, my mom's homeless? No. Let's see if we can reset this game. While she's busy finishing off her half a Snickers she found in the garbage can. Because it's been a good Tuesday. And then when she gets good and hungry, she's like, oh, yeah, I still got that baby snack coming. But she's too lazy and homeless to bend over and just pick it up. So instead, she'll just try to, like work up a momentum and try to catch it on the upswing. Like, remember those ball in the cup games? Remember those where you had to, like, catch a ball on the string in a little cup? That's what she'd do. And then munch, baby.
Okay, a couple notes on the homelessness stuff. One, it was one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult, time I've ever had making a bit work. It would make crowds angry at me. It would make them so mad. And I started to move it up in my act because I figured if I'm going to get people pissed at me, why not just do it right away? I remember having to struggle with this because I remember Joe Rogan talking about, he had some bit about God that he said was too hard to do in the beginning of his act. He had to do like 35, 40 minutes to really get the crowd on his side so when he can start questioning real details of God. And I had that thought too of like doing it later, but then I thought, nah, I'd rather just have my crowd know. And he even told me something once about, I don't think it was that, it was about something else. Maybe it was about this bit, the homelessness stuff. But he said, no, I like it. When I was opening for him, I only have 20 minutes time-wise and to do. And he would go, no, open up with the harshest stuff. Get the crowd, let them know right off the bat, this is what you're standing for. And with his crowds, man, it was easy to do that. So, yeah, I could really develop it to, like, open. The thing about the barfing on himself, this literally happened. I was on the corner. I was driving. I was on the corner of what was it? I think it was like La Brea. It was in Los Angeles. It was La Brea. It was turning onto La Brea from like Melrose, I think. And I saw this guy picking out of the garbage, a homeless guy picking out of the garbage. And he did have a new members only jacket. And he did just barf all over him. He got a banana. That used to be part of the bit. He got a banana, a half eaten banana. And he was like, all right, instead of a Snickers bar. But then he just barfed on himself like it was nothing and just stood there. And he was staring back at me. He was staring at me in the window. And I just drove off feeling really, really weird about the world. He didn't fucking react. He didn't fucking react. He just barfed like it was nothing. And I did see a pregnant lady, but I have no idea anymore where I saw her. But I saw like a seriously pregnant homeless woman. And so I sort of combined the idea of seeing that in the corner of a pregnant baby coming out of her uterus off the umbilical cord and the guy I saw into one. The only bit in this homeless part that I couldn't include, the only part was, and it's how the bit started. I was walking with a girlfriend on Sunset Boulevard and we passed a homeless guy and the way we both like tensed up and pretended to have a real conversation, like we were mock having a real conversation as we were walking. It's almost like as if someone you're talking about walks into the room and you have to go like, yeah, and the painted Picasso. I love Picasso. He's really great. You have to change the subject. That's how it is when you walk by homeless guys. When you're that close to them, you can't pretend like it's casual because he's right there and he might attack. And you don't want to like cross the street because, you know, he's a human. You don't want to be touching an asshole. And that part eventually gave way to the part about if they're talking over you while you're having pizza. But it started from that moment. And also, you know what? I should say this. I had that moment when I was walking down the street, and then I had that written down in a notebook of like, you know, maybe I'll do a bit about it. And I remember going to the Comedy Store. There are more bits lost because guys, like comics, don't just wake up and write their fucking shit down in a notebook so they can get back to it. So they just forget it. Or you're at a party and you're just like, forget to write down the idea. You're like, oh, I'll get back to that. That's a good idea. And you just forget it and you never get back to it. Some of the best bits in humanity, some of the best bits in history are lost for fucking lack of effort, lack of simple note-taking. And little moments that really allow them to happen again. I'm real proud of that fucking homeless bit, you guys. I'm real proud of it. I've worked that fucking hard. And there was this moment where I walked into the Comedy Store. It was on a Tuesday or Wednesday. Best nights at the Comedy Store for comedy. Maybe not to watch comedy, for developing comedy. Tommy, the talent coordinator, is not there. So it's a dry night. It ain't the weekend. You don't feel responsible to the crowd for like, hey, it's date night. You got to put on a great show. You're still trying to do well. Every comic's always trying to kill. But you're okay doing new material, and Tommy's not there, so there's no repercussions. There's none. Me and Renazisi always talk about it. Tuesdays and Wednesdays at the Comedy Store. Best places maybe in the world to develop comedy. And I walked in there one night. I think I was on after Argus Hamilton. Best spot in Los Angeles. The 9:30 following Argus on a Wednesday. And Tony Hinchcliffe, Tony the one-man pony, he was in the cover booth. He was still working the cover booth at the time at the Comedy Store. And it was a good crowd. I remember being a good crowd. And I was like, what do you think, Tony? New material or should I just try to slay it? And he goes, no, man, new material. Like, he was just so clear-minded about it. New material. And I was like, all right. All right. And I tried this bit and it killed. It destroyed. I did this one and I did another one. I don't know what the other one was. It's got to be on the album too, right? It's got to be on the album. What are the other bits I did here? I don't know. It might have been the mushrooms stuff, and it might have been, man, I don't know. I don't know, but it was definitely this homeless thing, and I did it, and it fucking killed. And that first time you do a joke, that's pretty important to whether or not the joke survives. I like to view jokes as like bits as like people, as little entities. And if I've done it twice and it doesn't go well, I know that third time, that joke's going to die. If it doesn't go well, that joke's dead forever. I'm not going to have the energy to do it again. It's got to go well once. So if I believe in a bit, I'll save it. I'll save it for a great crowd because I'm like to give it that last chance. But if you get that first one, you can go through 7, 8, 10 bombings in a row with it because it killed once. Harvey Penick, this great golf coach, he was Davis Love III's golf coach. He started as a caddy. He wrote these great books on golf, Little Red Book, If You Golf, You're My Friend, and maybe the Little Blue Book. That might have been a poker book, actually. But he said that the problem with the driver is that only pros should fucking hit it. Everyone else is just too dangerous. But what happens is you drive with it 14 times in an 18-hole course, all except the par threes, you hit it once perfectly. You pure it one time every three rounds, and that'll keep you hitting it. You're like, man, I can hit this. I know I can hit this. I've done it before. And it keeps you coming back. You kill one time with a bit. So, man, Tony telling me to do it, when I had it, it was fresh in my mind. You know what? That bit's dedicated to him. I don't know if it would have gone that well without him doing that one night. Fuck yeah, do new material, man. He was so excited about it. How could I not do it? All right, let's get back to it.
You guys are a cool crowd.
You really are. Because that bit, sometimes it goes south. And when it goes south, it goes south. There's anger and hatred. And your guys are all like, whatever, fuck it.
It's the best bit to do up front because everybody annoying is just going to leave. Like, oh, this has nothing to do for me.
Okay, that was just another segue, but I liked it. It had nothing to do with the bit out of context. Like, it wouldn't play. I guess it could be at the end of that bit, of the homeless bit, but it had nothing to do with the next one. And I needed a segue. Who's Derek? So this next bit is one of the first stories I ever did on This Is Not Happening, on a storyteller show, and it's one of the first stories I got to really work as a story. 100% real. I'll tell you the details afterwards.
The most beautiful thing, this was actually way too dirty early on, but
fuck it, I guess. Who cares? You guys all seem cool. This is the most beautiful thing I ever say. Are you guys familiar with the term money shot? Okay. If you're not familiar, I've tried to think of a clean way to say it, and this is the cleanest I can come up with. It's a sexual term. But a money shot, it's when a gentleman caller will express his love all over your face. Which, yeah, I am actually not a fan of that. Because I'm always like, you just let me have sex with you. I don't want to do that to your face. That seems rude. If you did not let me have sex with you, then I could see it. You know, that seems right. If I was like, hey, how about tonight? She's like, nah, I'm tired. I'm like, God damn it. I'm in the bathroom beating off, all angry. Fucking hate her so much. She's tired. Who's tired on a Saturday night? It's fucking ridiculous. You know what? Screw this. I'm a man. Just run up. And she's like, bleh. That would be an apt time to do it. But otherwise, I am not a fan of it. But I did it one time and one time only, okay? It was in college. It was the second girlfriend I ever had. First girl, like, we were both virgins. We were in love, you know? She went on the pill. It was awesome. The only problem is, since that's my only experience, I just assumed that from then on that every girl was just on the pill. Yeah, that's not the case, if you're still wondering. So the second girl, we did it, and every time we did it, it was a top bunk of her bunk bed with her roommate, sometimes sleeping in the bottom bunk. We didn't care. You remember college. Who cared? So we were doing it the first time, and it came time to bleh, or whatever. And so I just did it. I just went, no condom or anything, and I just fucking did it. And she just stops and looks up at me, and she goes, did you just come inside me? And I was like, I don't think I understand the question. What do you mean? Who was I supposed to come inside? Is there some sort of closer that comes in the ninth inning and finishes things off? Because if that's the case, I am down with that. Let's totally do that. I'm super in right now. Some hot Dominican refugee at those high 90s with heat. Let's fucking do it. She goes, no, idiot. I'm not on the pill. Oh. Yeah, that's exactly the noise I made. That's exactly the noise I made. It was like, this is like visceral. Like, you can't even stop. I was just like, shouldn't you have told me that like 30 seconds ago? What do you want me to do now? You want me to go to the kitchen and get you a spoon or something? Obviously now I know that's not going to work. By the time, I thought it was a viable option. I didn't have a lot of experience. I thought you'd be like, oh no, we fucked up. Hold on one second. Here's one. Scoop. I think we're good. I think we got it. We're good. You want ice cream as long as I got this out? So she goes, no, idiot, you have to pull out. And I'm like, all right, fucking next time I'll pull out. Relax. So she didn't get pregnant. So next time we were doing it, it came time again. I'm not going to make that mistake. I'm also not going to wear a condom, by the way. That time, I had no idea. I had sex with a condom once, and I just knew it sucked. This is what a condom feels like. For all the girls who don't know, this is what a condom feels like. Imagine, because you think it's the same for us. It's not. Imagine on a really cold day in Denver, like here, and you're driving your car. And you got gloves on because it's so cold. You're driving your car, and you pull over to a meter. And you have to put change in the meter, right? So you reach into your pocket to get some change. But you got these big fucking gloves on. So you reach in there, and you kind of feel it's like a quarter and a nickel. You can't quite feel which one's which, you know what I mean? It might be a book of matches or your cell phone. So you try reaching harder and faster, and you still can't feel a goddamn thing.
That's what fucking with the condom is like. So we did it the next time, and it came time again, so I'm not going to make that mistake. So I pulled out. I'm like, yes, I did it. But then I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I hadn't that far ahead in the chess match, you know? I'm just like, one move, guys. So I'm like, fuck, what do I do now? And then I just turned to the wall. I have no idea why, but I just turned to the wall, and I just fucking blasted it. Like, all over the wall. I got really into it, too. I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, yeah, take that. Fucking wall. I felt so cool. I felt like a porn star. I look back to her for support. Like, she'd be into it, too. But she was not into it, too. She was looking at me with this weird mixture of, like, fear and awe and wonderment. It was like she had just seen, like, a Tyrannosaurus Rex wearing a tutu. She was like, did you just, you know, not quite sure of herself. Did you just come on the wall? And I was like, what was I supposed to do with it? You told me to pull out. You were very clear. I didn't get any of your Morrissey posters. What's the diff? And she was like, no, idiot. You're supposed to come on me. You're supposed to do it on my belly button. And I'm like, okay, first of all, why do you keep calling me an idiot? Do you think I don't notice that? You're wrong. I notice every single time. I just had an orgasm. I'm very vulnerable right now. And your words sting, and they don't help me learn, okay? Second of all, and no less important, about this coming on you situation, are you lying? Because that is still, to this day, a thing I've never been able to wrap my head around. When someone's like, yeah, get it on me. I've never gotten that ever. I've never even heard of a guy doing the same thing. Where a guy's on top of a girl, like, having sex, and she's like, oh, I'm going to come. I've never heard of a guy like, oh, quick, fucking sit on my belly. Sit on my belly, please. Smush your vagina into my belly button. Please, smush it in. Please, I need it. Slap me in the face and call me a whore, please. Please, it makes it feel better. I've never, ever gotten that. Anyway, you might be asking yourself at this point, hey, where's the money shot in this story? Good question. Here's where it is. The next morning, the roommate woke up, and she goes... She goes, did you assholes glue my eye shut? Yeah, it had worked its way down overnight. Like one of those wacky wall crawlers, remember those? Used to find at McDonald's Happy Meals. Remember those things? The little octopuses? They were all rubbery and you could throw them against a wall and they would just like stick and then go like... Bleh. And then went off the roommate's face. Like nothing but net. Like Bird versus Jordan in 82. And that was my first and only money shot. And it was from long distance.
Okay, that happened at University of Maryland. It was in which dorm? Queen Anne's Hall. I used to deliver packages there. Not deliver, but I would sign packages in and at the North Hill service desk, me and my friends. And one day we got fired for continuously ordering BMG and Columbia House to rooms that didn't exist so we could log them in and just steal them. We just ordered CDs and was it still tapes then? No, CDs to just... bathrooms because they all had room numbers on them, and so someone would we would get a package, and then all of us would be like to a room that doesn't exist, and we'd be like who's Anne Arundel, who's Mrs. Fields, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I had Mrs. Fields, and then we got caught and we all got fired. But this happened with a girl named Amy, on the top bunk of a bunk bed. I ended up making out with a roommate once. We just kissed and stuff. She was kind of virginal. I think she had sex with like one person, so we didn't have sex. But Amy and I did, and yeah, I think it dripped down and went onto her her teddy bear. She had that teddy bear that she always slept with. She might not have been in the room when it happened. It might have just been later. It's a hazy memory. It's 15, 20 years ago. But yeah, Amy is now married. I don't know what she's up to. And I think she's got a bunch of kids, and I don't know what the other girl, what she's up to either. I don't even remember her name. yeah, most beautiful thing I've ever seen. All right, back to another segue.
You guys are cool. I like you a lot. I really do. You guys are non-judgmental. I can already tell. Some of you are probably too conservative for this, but you're like, ah, fuck it. Everybody else is going with it. We'll just go to church tomorrow.
Did not like that I said twice in segues that you guys are a good crowd. Seems like a cop-out, like I'm trying to get them on my side. I would have liked to have done it once. Twice was too much. For me, anyway. But it works as a segue anyway. I needed some sort of segue to get into this stuff, so whatever. Here we go. These next three bits should all be one bit, but I broke them up because of the tracks.
I hate when people like have their weird like insecurities or like differences and they expect everyone else to like live by them. You ever get those people? Like, you ever hang out with like a brand new sober alcoholic?
Yeah, they're horrible to hang out with. Don't get me wrong. If you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, you should have been there like 4 years ago. You're a fuck up and it'll help you. But I don't have a problem. Just you. Those first couple weeks, they see you having a beer with dinner. And they're like, really? Really? You're going to have a beer with dinner? Do you need it? Don't you think that means you have a problem? And you're like, if my problem is that I'm thirsty, then yes. Otherwise, please remember that you're the alcoholic. Not me. I might have a bunch of beers tonight. You know what I'm not going to do tomorrow? Have a bunch of beers, okay? I'm not a fucking alcoholic. You were blowing dudes for drugs like last Wednesday. You still have cum in your hair. Please don't look down on me.
I think that was about a girl, Sarah, that I dated for a while that I might have gotten pregnant. No, I mean, I got her pregnant. I don't know if it was definitely about Sarah, but I think it was. She got into AA, and then she started assuming, like, oh, you shouldn't drink, you shouldn't do this, and it really frustrated you. It got you to the point of, like, come on, man. You're the one who has a problem. I'm fine, and I don't even think you have a problem. And then, actually, a couple years later, she was like, actually, I'm not an alcoholic. I was just drinking too much at the time, so I wanted to stop, but it's different than alcoholism, which I agree with. Don't get me wrong. Some people need AA. I think it's a valuable service for a lot of people. I think we should have a similar thing, make drugs legal and have similar things to AA for drugs, for every drug. For the people who just, you know, for whatever reason, their bodies can't handle it. Anyway, let's not get political.
Just accept everyone's differences, that's all. I had this friend who's like a vegetarian, but like one of those militant vegetarians. Like most vegetarians just don't eat meat, but there's some that like drive by like a supermarket and they roll down the window so they can yell out murderers. Like that kind. And they treat you like you're a smoker. They'll like cough around you if you're eating a hamburger or something. Like, trying to make you feel bad. Like, it's barbaric. It's barbaric. It's animals. You're like, shut the fuck. It's not barbaric, all right? I didn't tackle a cow in front of you and bite his neck open. And then reach in and grab his heart and just pull it out and go like, yes! We died! It's a hamburger. You've seen this before. And I was eating once. I was eating this giant turkey leg in front of my friend, this militant vegetarian. And this giant turkey leg, and she got all mad at me. And she was like, you're really going to eat that in front of me? And I'm like, it's not like I'm eating it on the backstroke, touching your face with it. Like, mm, mm. Bathe in it, yes. Bathe in the death. Feel death. Otherwise, let me eat my giant turkey leg in peace. It's literally the only reason I came with you to the Renaissance Fair. It's the best reason to go to the fair, man. Get that giant turkey leg and watch the fuck out of some joust.
That bit was about this girl named Stefania, I think, that I worked at the Health Network with. She literally would scream out murderers every time she passed a Ralph's. It's a supermarket chain in California. Every time she passed one, she would go, "Murderers!" And it was like, wow. She used to have to order a lunch for us. that was her job. She was the assistant to the she was assistant to the president, and I was assistant to the vice president. They offered me a job, and then I said no because they weren't going to offer me as much as Stefania was making. And they go, "No, she just got a raise." I'm like, "I know, but right before she got a raise, you have to offer me that much. That's what she started at." And they were like, "I don't know." And I was like, "Well, I'll tell you what. If you just let me have time off so I can go on the road for stand-up." I wasn't even going on the road at the time. I was like, "But if you let me have time off, then I'll do it." And they go, "You get 2 weeks off every year. That's about it. We're not going to really sway on that." And then I was like, one of the best decisions I've ever made. It would have been a stable job when I was super poor, but I was like, nah, I can't do it. I could have done it for like 3 more years before it would have become a problem, but I'm glad I didn't. And obviously, you've never been to the state fair. Giant turkey leg and the joust go together hand in hand. Although, generally, you end up eating the giant turkey leg right by the misters because it's so hot over next to the trash cans. It's kind of disgusting. Next bit. This all sort of goes together. Those last two and this one all go together as like people judging each other, judging others without looking at themselves. Okay, here we go.
I just hate when people don't allow for anyone else's differences. Like, I had this friend, that same girl. She was sitting on a couch once, and I walked up behind her, and I just said, "Hey, Margaret," and I touched her on the top of the head. I didn't ruffle her hair or anything. I was like, "Hey, how you doing?" And I came up around, and she didn't like it. So here's how she expressed herself. She goes,
"Ari."
That was the exact impression. That was exactly what it sounded like. I'll do it in slow motion. It was hand.
Yeah.
Ari. That's a version of my name. And then just in case I didn't know, one more. And I was like, "Is something wrong?" And she goes, "Yeah, okay, I don't like that. I have a thing about that. I have a thing about people touching me in the top of the head. It's like my thing." And I'm like, "All right, that's cool, that's fine. But you should know, that's your thing. You're crazy. Do something to alert others. Wear a helmet. Let us know. We have no way of knowing. It's not like I walked up to you and touched your vagina. And then when you flinch, I'm like, what's your fucking problem, bitch?" "Oh yeah, Colorado. Nobody likes touching vaginas in Colorado." Like, that would be my fault. This one's your weird thing. And she was like, "Oh yeah, really? Really? Let me prove it to you. How would you like it if I did this to you?" And she put her hands right on the top of my head. And I was like, "That's human contact. I would love that. If you keep your hand there, that'll keep me from killing myself for one more day." Everybody loves a hand on the head. You don't love this more than anybody? Cats. If you put your hand up to a cat, they'll be like, "Oh, is it my birthday? Already? Oh, dude." And they shove that head up. They stand on little cat tiptoes and just go like, "Yes. Oh, this is exactly what I wanted. You're the best, bro. Oh," and they walk away and go, "Fuck you for a month." And they just wander off. Cats love it. That's why I never understood. Whenever you see like a lion or a tiger attack, nobody ever just picks their hand up. Those are just big cats. Maybe you're gone either way. Just hold your hand up and maybe be like, "Oh, that's all I wanted. A little head attention. If I could get out of there."
That bit, it was not about a girl named Margaret. It was about a different girl. It wasn't the same girl. My feeling about comedy and truth in comedy and stand-up is that you don't have to leave every detail the same, but the overall, the points and the feelings that I want the crowd to take away, those have to be truthful. So whether or not this was the same girl or a different girl, that just helps to make the bits go together. But it was a different girl. It was my friend's manager, and it happened at the Montreal Comedy Festival in 2008, I think. That was the first year I went. I just lost Comedy Festival. And then we were all hanging out at this hotel. after the shows and everyone drinks and stuff. And I did. I came up behind her. I was like, hey, hi. And I put my hand on her head. Didn't even ruffle it. And man, she got so mad at me. Then later I apologized. I sent her a big email or Facebook saying, hey, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to make you feel uncomfortable. I apologize for anything that made you feel weird. No response. Nothing. She's cool with me now, but you can tell there's always that thing. There's always that thing in between us. And then her fucking client, I saw him later. I was like, hey, I think she's mad at me. He goes, yeah, man, what are you touching people's heads for? And I was like, oh, man, she told you about it. She told you about it. Why are you taking her side? Just stay out of it. That's my thing. Shut up. All right, you guys. It's like those people who don't shake hands. Like, oh, I just don't shake hands. Well, you can't just not do that. People are going to talk about you. They're going to think it's weird. You can not do it if you want, but people aren't going to relate to you as a normal person. All right, this next bit is about gay marriage, and I wanted to not stop doing it until gay marriage was legalized, at least in California. It came out of a place of one day I saw them marching down the street. Gay marriage was legal in California for a period of like six months or so. A judge ruled it's allowed. Everyone started getting married, and then the injunctions came, and they said, okay, they voted on it. And they said, no, it's not legal anymore, which to me was so much worse than just not having it legal in the first place. It means they had it legal, and in the year, whatever it was, 2000, 2007, whatever it was, they went out of their way to make a new law saying, no, that should be illegal. And I was like, ooh. And all these gays were marching down Sunset one day. I was at the Comedy Store in the front patio. I saw all these gay guys marching down and just saying, our love is valid. And things like that. And just like, we just want the same protections as any married couple gets. And I just felt so bad for them. I remember thinking like, we're California. We're supposed to be the leaders. We're the ones who led the nation in like emissions shit for cars. We were the first ones to ban smoking in bars to protect. And I know you might like that, but for the girls and the boys, I guess, who work at bars, you shouldn't have to smoke 4 packs a day in secondhand smoke just because you work at a place. You have to protect workers. And now almost every place is like, go outside to smoke. It becomes normal. It becomes normal, but people fight it right away. So I'm really glad I did this bit. I'm kind of happy about it. It was one of the first bits I had where I'm like, this is a social sort of a speech I'm giving in comedy form. So gay marriage. Check. 15 on my album. Here we go.
That's why, by the way, this whole theory of like, don't expect everyone else to live by your rules. That's why I'm for gay marriage. I don't know how you guys feel about it. My feeling. Oh, are you? Okay, cool. I don't know how it was. I just saw a graph recently that said 2 states had gay marriage legal. It was like Vermont and somewhere in the Midwest. Maryland. It's not Maryland. They're coming, getting to Iowa. Is it really Iowa? Iowa? We should all be embarrassed. We should all be embarrassed if Iowa beat us to anything. Except inbreeding. If they beat us to inbreeding, you're like, I didn't compete. I'm okay. Yeah, all my friends. The weirdest thing is we had it legal in California for like 6 months, gay marriage. And then the Mormons came in and their official stance was, nah. So everyone's like, all right, Mormons, relax. So they took it away. But the weird thing was that like the vote was split like 50-50. It was down the line. Black people, for some reason, came out like 80% against gay marriage, which is weird because all my black friends were like, Obama's running. So they're all finally like, Obama's our president. We're all free. We're all the same. We're all together. But then it's like, no. Not you, faggot. Not you. We're all free and the same and together. Get your own celebration. Fucking! Why are you listening to Mormons anyway? They're the craziest religion in the world. Yeah. That's a completely made up religion. Not like all of them, I guess, but like more so. Everybody knows it. You're crazy. If you get a vote, I'm not political at all. I just stay home and get high all day and just say I was voting. But like, you can't vote for that Mormon until he renounces his faith. That's a crazy faith. And if tell me you're wrong. If you're Mormon, I totally stand by those words. Like you're fucking crazy, and then you get out of that fucking cult. This is what Mormons have taught, by the way. This is what they've actually taught. Mormons have taught that Jesus went to America when he was around. They don't really say how he got there. It was a long time ago. Maybe TWA was still around. I don't know. But he came to America with a bunch of Hebrews and left the Hebrews there in America, and they became the Native Americans.
Hebrews, Jews, me, this is a Native American. I'm an Indian, they're saying.
But then, and I swear to God on all this, they taught this, and they don't teach it anymore, but they used to. They taught that Jesus then took another bunch of Hebrews and went to the moon, where he started a race of people called the Lunarians, where they still live to this day. Or at least they were teaching that until we actually went to the fucking moon. And we were like, hey, Mormons, where are all these people you were talking about? Nobody was here to welcome us at all. And they were like, oh, well, you have to understand, 200 years ago, when we made this up, we didn't think anybody would actually go to the fucking moon. That seemed like one of the safest lies in history. Like, what, are you going to call me on it? You're going to take your golden ladder to the fucking block of cheese in the sky? Just fucking technology outdid Mormonism, so just drop it now. That's all I'm trying to teach. Black people should not listen to Mormons. He wouldn't let up to it. He goes, no, but there's also this. It's because they're going to teach it in our schools. They're going to teach homosexuality in our schools. And I'm like, wait, do you think they're going to teach the kids how to be gay? Is that what you think? That's not happening. They're not like showing the kids in second grade the footage of the men's Brazilian soccer team with their shirts off. And the teacher's going to hand out like Johnson & Johnson, my first lube, and just watch them fucking stroke it. And he goes, if something comes up, let's go talk to the guidance counselor. We'll make you a homosexual.
That stuff from they're not going to teach it in our schools. It wasn't even part of the bit. I get a lot of my material from a crowd at the store or workout sets. We're all like, ask the crowd questions. And sometimes they'll present me with information I hadn't thought of. And I was doing this bit at the Pasadena Ice House. And I asked somebody, I was like, is anybody against gay marriage? Somebody raise their hand. And I try not to be judgmental because I want the information. So I go, well, what is it? What is it about gay marriage that you're against? And he goes, they're going to teach it in our schools. And he seemed really, really concerned with it. Like, and I was like, well, what do you think that means, though? And he didn't really know. He was just like, well, I know they shouldn't teach it in our schools. And I really was like, well, what do you think that means? And it came from a riff of like, do you think that means they're going to teach you how to be gay? Because that's not the case. And I think he sort of did think that. It's amazing how the media can have an effect. You just present these terms. And everyone, myself included, we don't read the whole story. We just read the headlines. I'm like, oh, fuck no, you can't teach gay in our schools. Yeah, so that's where that tagline of it came out of. And I'm happy to say now it's the tide is turning and most states, or more and more states, excuse me, not most yet, more and more states are, and not because of me in any way, but more and more states are making gay marriage legal. I'm saying, who fucking cares? It's clearly, if you allow one group to do this and not another, that's not fair. Like, well, marriage should be between a man and a woman. All right, well, then do it. If that's what you believe with your religious beliefs, and it's only religion, then just do it. You're like, well, you can't have kids if you get gay married. Yeah, but straight marriages don't have to be for children. There's plenty of like heterosexual couples that don't have children. So should that not be allowed either? Come on, guys. It's time to be accepting of other people. It doesn't affect you. It doesn't affect you what they do in their own homes. Same with drugs. All right.
Just don't. I used to judge people all the time. I used to be like, ah, that was gay getting married. But now I just stopped. I don't know if you guys do that. If you ever take stock in your life and realize you're a complete hypocrite. I am all the time. If I see somebody in their car talking on their cell phone or something with it to the ear and they go through a red light or something, I'm always like, you fucking animal. Piece of shit. Let it have dry, you fucking moron. Oh, went through a red light. Just went through the next possible red light. I am way too drunk to be texting right now. Where are those glasses? Just judging other people. So now I try not to do it. That's the thing that mushrooms really help. They help me like learn that I'm the same as everybody else. I'm no better and I see myself as them. I saw somebody the other day. They were in the car. They were picking their nose in the car. But this guy was going for it. Like, he was working in there, like a Mexican trying to get into Arizona. Just fucking working swiftly and deeply for freedom. And he caught me looking, and he got all embarrassed, and he tried to take his hand away. But for the first time in my life, I realized, like, you know what? It's cool. I do it too sometimes. So I just put my finger up my nostril and I just go, yeah, man, thumbs up. I do it too. Live your life. I don't know why. There's a couple places I like to do it. I like to do it there and I like to do it. I don't know why. I do it on elevators. I pick it and then I wipe it onto the wall. I'm not proud. It's just what I do. Like right next to the buttons. Not on the buttons. Not on the buttons. I'm not trying to ruin anyone's day. Just right next to the buttons. I want it to look like a slug from another dimension. Transported in, crawled halfway down, and then made every assumption he wanted to about Earth based on that elevator. And then transported the fuck back off. I don't do it, by the way, when anybody else is on the elevator. I'm not like, what are you nerds gonna do about it? Nothing. Fucking bitches. Punk ass bitches. Yeah, I do it there and I do it in the car. I don't know if you guys did too. It feels comfortable there. I know it's all glass all around you, but since it's a tight space, it just feels like you're alone. So not all the time, but sometimes I'll pick it. And then I'll pick and then I'll roll it into a ball. And then I'll pick more with the other hand. And I'll add it to the first ball. And I'll just continue doing that. Until I've built up enough mass in the ball that I can roll down the window and throw it at Mercedes-Benz's. Yeah. And that's how I get revenge for the Holocaust. Right? Yeah, one windshield at a time. I just say, fuck you, Hitler, and that's how I can do it. People are like, what are you even talking about?
Interesting note about this bit, it was at some point a little too similar to a Neil Brennan bit, and he handled it like the exact right way. He said, hey man, that joke you're doing, it's kind of close to one of my jokes, and it's sort of a bit that I always do. I was like, oh, really? And it was about texting and driving. And he goes, yeah. And he didn't make it seem like, well, no one can do a joke about texting and driving. What he said is, it's like the centerpiece of my act at the current time. And he goes, if you could just not do it if I'm on stage later than you, I would appreciate it. Handle it in a nice way. And I was like, you know what, man? Sure, I'll try that. But then every time I was on stage and I was about to do it, I was like, well, wait, I didn't check the lineup. Is Neil Brennan on after me? Is he on tonight? I don't know. So with no real effort, I just rewrote it a little bit. I just rewrote it a little bit, and it didn't really have anything to do with the stuff he was doing. And yeah, so that's what the finished product was right there. Oh, and that part about being too drunk and wearing my glasses came from a period where I met some girl. I think this girl, Julia, from the Joe Rogan message board. At a bar, I think it was that one where those lounge singers from Swingers were. What are their names? The Dresden is the name of the bar. I forgot their names. But they just do like lounge versions of regular rock songs. Oh, what are their names? It's Marty and Elaine. Marty and Elaine. Yeah, they were in Swingers as a cameo, and they're there all the time. You check out the Dresden. It's pretty fucking cool. It's on Los Feliz. In Los Feliz. Wait, no, it's on Vermont. Excuse me. In Los Feliz. But it came from, I was drinking with that girl. I had a couple, not drunk, but kind of drunk. Wanted to make it, but we left. We ended our date, whatever. And then I was trying to make it back to the Comedy Store before last call. So I drove all the way down Sunset. Too drunk to drive, you guys. It was too drunk. And I drove all the way down Sunset. And then right in front of the Saddle Ranch, which is like four doors down from the Comedy Store. I remember looking for my glasses. Looking for them. Like, what did I do? I'm like, how come I don't have my glasses on? I don't remember why I didn't have them on. And a cab stopped in front of me. At the Saddle Ranch to see if anybody wanted to get picked up, and he just stopped suddenly, and I hit him. When I looked up, I was like, I tried to slam on the brakes and just didn't stop in time, and I rear-ended him. Drunk. And I still judge other people for doing the same shit. And, I mean, luckily for me, I didn't get any real trouble. My insurance had to pay for it. Cops kind of slowed down as we were outside taking pictures, and like 90 other cab drivers came up and like started taking pictures of it and shit. I was like, get out of here, man. It's just between us, you fucking Armenians. But some cops slowed down as I looked, and I gave him the wave, like, nah, we're fine. We're handling it. Because I was like, oh, if he'll smell the liquor on my breath, and he'll arrest me. One of those things in life where you just sort of get lucky. And then after that, I don't think I ever drove drunk again, except maybe once. Or maybe that one time was before this one. I don't know. Eventually, I just switched to pot, so I don't drunk drive. Okay, track 17. Fuck the Lakers. This happened because the Lakers were playing Denver, in Denver, I think, or maybe Denver in L.A., but it was the playoffs. And man, I hate the Lakers. They ruin shows. They ruin comedy shows in L.A. Oh, and also, by the way, the tracks at some point become a little bit off. Like the last word or two in a bit will be pushed because I did a little more editing on the CD and we already chose the track times. It bothered me. It annoyed me, but it's not the worst thing in the world. And so, like, the track, at the end of a track, it'll keep going for, like, 2 seconds, and then you're into the next track. It's a little weird, but no big deal. You'll see it now. It starts off with, like, just the last word or two. What is it?
You know what you did to my people.
Yeah, you know what you did to my people. That would have been part of, like, the previous track, and then I would have cut. But whatever. Back to the album. What are we doing? Oh, yeah, fuck the Lakers.
You know what you did to my people. Okay, I have a question right now. You, with the BDLA shirt.
Yeah.
I want you to check the score of the game. Can you do that? But only him right now. The Lakers are playing Denver right now.
41-44.
What is it?
41-44.
Oh, that's close. Wait, Lakers? Fuck. I hate the Lakers so goddamn much. I hate the Lakers so goddamn much. I know I come from LA, but fuck the Lakers. They ruin comedy shows every goddamn time they're in the playoffs. All the bandwagon fans stay at home and watch, and nobody comes out to shows. Fuck the Lakers. I hate them so much. And that rapist, Kobe Bryant. He's the fucking team captain. He's in no... Oh, that was Denver. He raped that chick in Denver. You guys should give her season tickets. And every time the Lakers play in town, just seat her right behind the opposing bench. Just have her wear a t-shirt that says, I still remember. You should. Fuck that guy. He totally raped that chick. And all my friends are like, dude, but his turnaround jumper is sweet, so don't bring it up. I will bring it up. I will. I hate the Lakers. All my friends tried to defend him, too. They're like, dude, he didn't rape that chick in Denver. All he did was he put it in her butt when she didn't want it in her butt. I guess that leads me to another question, then. What do you consider rape? How do you define it? Because if Kobe Bryant put it in my butt, after I specifically told him, I do not want that in my butt. If I was very clear, that there's no questions, I made him put the Xbox on pause. I was like, Kobe, listen, you see that thing? You see that? I don't want, forget why it's even out. Let's not even talk about that right now. I don't want that in my butt, okay? I do not want it in or around my butt. Don't even get it close. I don't want it anywhere near my butt. Now say it back to me so I know we're on the same page. And if he said it back to me, we were very clear, and then I turned to walk away, and he still put it in my butt, rape would be the exact charge that I'd be too embarrassed to report to the police. If you're a Laker fan, I hope you get divorced and your children develop Down syndrome. Yeah, that's how much I hate that. Not they're born with that. I hope they're born normal and then develop it so they remember what it was like. Check into the score in 20 minutes, okay? I love how you wore a Beat LA shirt to my show. That's fucking rad. Even though it's a Celtics shirt, I don't care. Fuck LA. Fuck the Lakers. People are like, can I just get into the not have the Down syndrome part? Can I just have the divorce part? Because I was about to do that anyway. No. No.
Denver ended up losing to the Lakers in the series. It was a tough, hard-fought series. Steve Blake, University of Maryland alumnus, hit a big three in one of those games from the corner. Just a fucking role player. I was watching from a bar across the street from the Comedy Works. So frustrated. God, I hate them. It's so nice now that they're doing badly. Not going to make the playoffs. Man, it feels good.
Here's what I've been doing in my dating life recently. I don't know why, but I started dating like really young women. I'm 38. I date anywhere from like 25 to like 20. It's where it's a little bit creepy, but here's a rule. There's a rule that's like half your age plus 7. But there's another rule, which is fuck it. So I like that rule better. It's just like, who cares? Girls are fun to be around. I don't like people my own age. I like that age better. They're still full of life and hope. You know, at 22, you go into a job interview and you expect to get it. They haven't been beaten down by the realities of existence yet. It's ready to go. At 24 years old, you wake up, you're like, what does the world have to offer Melissa? Once you hit 30, it becomes like pain and suffering. That's all it ever has to offer. You just like being around it. Like, I could be a doctor or a lawyer or even the president. And you're like, okay, dummy.
These bits were split up into three tracks, but it's just one track. I mean, it's just one bit. Dating younger women. Young women are not all stupid. And perfect vaginas. These three, they're all pretty much the same. But they were too long, so I tried to find ways to cut into different bits as much as I could. By the way, I still get off on hanging around with young women. They're full of life and hope. It's true. It's true.
Okay. And that's the other thing. My friends are like, don't you find those girls stupid when they're young? Don't you find them dumb? I'm like, no, a lot of them are in college. They're reading great works of literature all the time.
But a lot of them are not in college, and they're retarded.
Especially if you're hot. If you're like a hot 22-year-old to a college-educated 37-year-old man, you're like a smart dog. Like, don't get me wrong. You do awesome tricks. I love your tricks. But we're never going to play chess. And that's okay. That's fine.
Have you ever had someone say something to you that's so stupid that you can't even quite be sure that they even said that? Where you're like, nobody's that dumb. I must have misunderstood you. I was on a date in Los Angeles. You guys know where the Walk of Fame is? And Hollywood, the stars are on the ground. This is what she actually said to me. She goes, I love coming here because I love walking over the graves of the fallen celebrities.
It's like, wait, what do you think is happening right now? What do you think is going on? You need to repeat yourself. Because if you said what I thought you said, then you know what? I love you. And let's just make this official right now. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. Or at least until you turn 26. And then you can hit the road, hag.
And she said it again. But the problem was she said it so confidently that a part of me was like, am I wrong? Are these graves? Really? When did Alf die? That's not even a person. No. I'm right. I'm totally right. And I told her she was wrong, and this is what she said. She goes, oop, guess I was wrong. And it was over. That's refreshing as fuck. Fight for 6 months for no reason.
I had to structure the bit this way because the last part was about how great the bodies are of women from, you know, 20 to 25 years old. They're in the prime of their lives. They're great. But what would happen is crowds would turn on me. The women in the crowds would get angry at me. So I had to save that part, the part about their great bodies, for the end and go over the first parts where I call them sort of stupid, I call them naive, and that way the older women would get on my side, then I could hit them with this bit, perfect vaginas, and that would allow me to keep the crowd with me. That's just a note on the order. So here we go. Perfect Vaginas, track 20. We're almost done.
And the best thing about girls, like young women like that, 22, 24, is this. Your vagina at that age is perfect. Everything is still like inside and stuff, you know? It's still, the parachute is still packed. They just look like they're supposed to in the book. You should enjoy that while you can, because at some point, it won't look like that anymore. At some point, it looks like it took a hand grenade and just said, fuck it. Just pulled a pin. And swallowed it, and let it sink to the bottom of your stomach, and then just goes, tick, 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 tick. Just blows everything out, just into this weird vag cleavage situation that looks like Inspector Gadget's hat. Don't get me wrong, I'll still take it. I'll still accept that in a vagina. That's just not what I was shopping for, that's all I'm saying. I'm never gonna be like, send it back to the chef. You know, it's just not what I was, it's like my dream car, it's a Maserati. But I'll drive a Honda Civic.
Yeah, that was it. And so now I go from there, and it still makes women, still makes some older women, even 28, 29, they get mad. People get mad. We're like, why are you talking about me? And you're like, because I am. I don't know. I'm just stating the facts. I'm sorry if you don't like it. But if it says like Jews aren't traditionally NBA players, I wouldn't get pissed. I'd be like, yeah, it sucks, but we're not. But man, girls would get mad a lot. So I had to really focus on the order. And then went from here, and this was still, even with the other stuff about calling younger women dumb and all that stuff, even then, they would still, like, the saying that the vaginas of younger women are better than the older women would still turn the crowd, the females in the crowd, against me a little bit, even with all that other stuff. So then I have to go straight from there into this next bit where I talk about my own shortcomings in my body. I think we got, like, three tracks left.
It's functional. And it's not like I'm any better at all, by the way. At 38, my balls, they've become so fucking droopy and like wrinkled that at this point, when I'm naked, it looks like I always just sat in gum. It's just this weird, like, I go over, I'm like, oh, motherfucker. And then, is that bazooka? No, no. No, I wish it was. No, it's not. Those are my testicles. They'll be like that forever now. Yours are like that too now, right? Yeah, I know. At some age, your wife was like, were they always that way? And you're like, no, they weren't. Just one day you're doing a doggy style, and she's like, are you choking me? And you're like, choking you? No, what are you talking? Oh, the balls just swinging around. Fucking grabbing onto your neck. Like an extra hand. It's a new fucking weapon in your arsenal. My body is failing me.
I got that line from a crowd member. Looks like I sat in gum. I had him out. I have my balls out a lot on the stage at the Comedy Store. Don Barris always, like, you know, pushes me into taking them out. And I don't mind. I don't mind doing it. One time a guy tipped me $1,000. Because if you take him out, he was trying to get me to take him out, Barris. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And he goes, if you take him out, I will give you $1,000. Now, this is a guy who had already been in the club the last, like, 2 weeks. He owned, like, 10 magazines. He was some super rich guy. Bought the whole crowd champagne, like, a few times. And he had already seen my balls out. He knew they were coming. And Barris was trying to get me to, like, take him out. And I was like, no, it's not worth it. And then someone in the crowd, someone on the side by the window was like, I'll give you 35 cents. Because Barris like, does anybody give this guy money? And he goes, I'll give you 35 cents. And I was like, I don't know if that's enough. And then this other guy goes, I'll give you $1,000. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. He knew I was going to do it anyway. It was just an excuse to get involved. He just wanted to be involved with a funny. And yeah, after the show, he gave me $1,000. It really mattered in my life. He gave me $1,000. And I counted and I smelled it in front of everybody. I made a couple of Jew jokes. And then Don was like, all right, man, well, that's great. So that's it. You know, thanks for your time. And I was like, no, hold on a second. He goes, what? What else do you want? He goes, and I go, that guy by the window said 35 cents. I want that too. We made him give me his 35 cents. Yeah. So that bit was, I guess, a response to the fucking girls getting angry. And then now here comes the Sydney Harbour Bridge joke. This happened while I was in Sydney, Australia, with Joe Rogan. I skipped the UFC and I went and took the Sydney Harbour Bridge climb. I still have a picture of it. Oh, I wish I could. I don't have that here. I would scan it. Put that as the cover. Nah. Anyway, so this is that bit. I kind of want somebody to animate that. I've been offering to pay $1,000, but animation costs a shitload. I'm not going to make any money off it, though, so it's tough for me to spend more than $1,000 trying to get this thing animated. But I think it'd be really cool animated. Anyway, this would kill at the Montreal Comedy Festival and the NASA show. I had an agent, a manager once, who this guy Ben, who said he came to see my material once. He was already representing me. Came to see my material. I'd already gotten back from Montreal. And this bit was like the centerpiece of the Nasty Show. I would do it every night. I'd do one other bit too. I think maybe the money shot thing. Those are the two like bits I would consistently do. And man, everybody in the industry loved it. They loved it. And so one day Ben came and he went to see my material at the Comedy Store. I did that bit among a couple others. And he goes, "Hey man, you know, that bit is just like, it's a poop joke. That's all it really is. It's a poop joke." And I remember like having the cold sweats and going like, "Oh, you're so short-sighted. Like, if that's what you think, man, it's like everybody in the industry loved it. And you don't?" And then I realized like, oh, you see me as an open micer and you're looking for a reason why I'm bad instead of looking for a reason, like for a way to really sell me. Instead of looking for a way to be like, "Wow, I'll take that and I'll push you with it." You were looking for a reason why you shouldn't. And I just got these cold sweats and I realized like I had to drop this guy as a manager. And then later, well, I'll save this for afterwards. After the bit.
It really is. I shit my pants in Australia last year. Yeah, that's not the joke. That's not any part of the joke. That's the informational part that comes at the beginning. It wasn't when I was a baby, by the way. I wasn't like 3. I was a year younger than I am right now. I look just like this. But I had caca in my underpants. I was in Sydney, Australia. I was in this giant bridge. It's called the Sydney Harbour Bridge. It's this giant bridge. It looks like the Brooklyn Bridge. It has these pylons that go up like this, you know, like really high. But it's like way bigger. And this is a hike where you can walk on top of those things, those steel cables. And it's like this 3-hour-long hike. And I was like 30 minutes into it when I got my first diarrhea pang. I'm like, this is going to be a problem. Because I don't know what you guys do when you get diarrhea, but what I do is I do the diarrhea math. And I figure out, where am I on the scale of 1 to 10? And that'll tell me how badly I need to take action right now. Because you have to know right now, because diarrhea gives you no warning whatsoever. It doesn't come on slowly. It comes on at full strength right away. It's not like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. No, diarrhea is for real. The diarrhea, like, la-di-da, not a care in the world. Everything's really sunny. Oh, fuck! Diarrhea's here! It's here! So you got a 1 to 10 it immediately. You got to know. With 1 is like nothing. A 1 is like, when this comes out tomorrow, it's going to be a bit moist. And that's a 1. That's technically, I guess, it's diarrhea. And a 10 is like, where the fuck is the bathroom? And I was like an 8.7. Like, I was pretty far up there. And so I go to the tour guide. I'm like, how much longer till we get to the top? And he goes, like another hour and 10 minutes. All right, let's see what I'm made of as a man. You know, this is my moment to test myself. Heroes aren't asked to be called upon. They're just called. So I just sucked it up as hard as I could. And I just started like duck walking up this giant bridge. And Sydney, Australia, just go like, "Ugh! Yeah, man, hold it in.
It hurts. Oh, it hurts. It hurts so bad. It hurts so fucking bad. Whatever it feels like to give birth, this was the opposite of that. Just 100% pure sucking. It was like a doctor was standing over me, yelling like, "Pull! I can see the head! Pull!" And I'm fucking trying to do it. There's a Scottish guy in line, like, right behind me. And he goes, "Pick up the pace, please." And I'm like, "Shut your fucking mouth, Scotland! I'm working on something right now! Oh my god!" Every once in a while, I would just get too much. Like, I couldn't control it. And I have to do the cross leg thing. You know, where you just cross your legs over as far as you can. Do, like, the reverse splits almost. And then you just stand there holding it. I've seen people like this in the supermarket before, by the way. I have. I once saw a lady in this peanut butter aisle just... like, frozen Mr. Universe smile on her face. Convulsing rapidly. Just like that. She wasn't looking at peanut butter, by the way. She didn't give a fuck about peanut butter. She was just trying not to shit herself in front of her neighbors. Until she was like, "You were good." And then she's right back. And that's what I was on this bridge. Just like, "Hold it! Oh my god! Hold it!" I was sweating so much. I was sweating hard, but not in the forehead. I wasn't sweating on the forehead. The forehead, that's a sweat of heat or exertion. I'm sweating under the eye. The sweat of mistakes and regret. But I'm doing it, though. I'm telling you, I'm in control of the game for like 54 minutes. Until the end of this hike, and I have no idea why, but there's this ladder that just goes straight up for like 12 to 15 steps. And I'm staring at this ladder, and I'm like, "I don't know how I'm supposed to get up here." Because I don't know if you guys can squeeze your butt cheeks together as hard as you've ever done that ever before in your life. And try to bend your knee at the same time. But like, you can't do it. You can't do both at the same time. It's like sneezing with your eyes open. I have no idea why bending the knee like this, that's a release valve. I have no idea why the knee is connected to the asshole. If you ask me, that's a design flaw. Should be corrected in later models. But for some reason, you bend that knee, that just opens up the floodgates. So I'm staring at this ladder. I'm like, "What am I supposed to do here without my knees?" The Scottish guy taps me on the shoulder, and I'm like, "What?" He's like, "The ladder's clear." And I'm like, "I know the ladder's clear, Braveheart. Shut up. God, you're annoying. The Scottish people are annoying people. I get what the English hate you now. I get it." So I'm like, "All right, what am I supposed to do here? Why'd they put a bridge on the goddamn ladder beyond me, by the way?" Maybe they didn't expect people with diarrhea to come by. In fairness to them. So I was like, "All right, here's what I'll do. I'll think outside the box. I'll just reach up as high as I can. And I'll grab onto one of the rungs of the ladder. And I'll just do pull-ups. I'll just step by step. I'll just pull my dead body up this ladder." And it was dead because I'm squeezing so hard from the middle. Like from here down, it's just dangling away. Like Joe Theismann's leg. Just hanging there. So I do like 3 pull-ups and then I realize, oh, I'm very weak. I don't know what made me think I could do 12 straight pull-ups. My record was like 9 and that was in college. Like there's literally no chance I have of doing that. And I get to like 4 and then I start doing the shakes. And I brought it to about the nose and I was like, going the wrong way. And then like I lost it. And as I let go, my right leg, it caught on one of the rungs of the ladder. Yeah. And you just went like that. And as it bent, you just hear this sound. This horrible, horrible sound. Just bent, you just hear this.
Oh,
Because until you touch your butt, you still are holding out hope. You know, that's what we do as humans. We hold out hope. And you're just like, please, maybe. Maybe it's that 0.1% chance that it was just a wet fart. Please let it just be a streaker. And you reach back there and you feel a chunk. Not chunks. Anything but chunks. And I just stood there for what seemed like forever, like 2 full minutes, just feeling bad for myself. Like, what is wrong with you, Ari? What is wrong? You're a grown man. You're an American representing your country in a foreign land. And your underwear is full of wet kangaroo meat. Because you had to get adventurous at dinner last night. And I just stood there feeling bad for myself for like 2 full minutes until I remembered, oh yeah, that Scottish guy is still right behind me. And I'm up 3 steps, so he's pretty much ass to face right now. So like right in front of him, he just saw the Morse code situation that was laying out in front of his face, and my pants was pushing long and shorts. And he just heard the sound. He just heard the which is an unmistakable sound. Nobody ever hears that sound and goes, oh, ice cream truck. Like, that's never happened. So I turn around to see if he had seen, right? This was his face. He was going like this. Just staring up, like whatever was on his mind was just wiped off completely. It was just etch-a-sketched right off. Like he was like, maybe later I'll go to the zoo, and then his hands were like out like a boxer who just got knocked out but hadn't fallen yet. Like that. And we're just staring at each other. Like there's a nonverbal tug of war going on. Nobody wants to be the first one to talk. With his mind, he was like, how do you want to play this? And with my mind, I was like, no, 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 no. It's your move now. I just laid my cards on the table. So this is what he did, and it was so fucking kind. He looks at me, and he just goes, did you just shit your pants? That wasn't a nice part, by the way. That was just a weird, honest question. And by the way, if the roles were reversed, there's no way in the world I'm going to bring that up. If I'm the guy who heard it, then you can never in a million years. He'll turn around and be like, oh, crazy weather we're having. Politics, sports and so forth is nuts this time of year. I'm never going to deal with that. He just went right for it. You just shit your pants. And I wanted to lie. Obviously, I'm not going, like, truth on this one, right? Truth? No. I was thinking, like, just tell him, like, a pelican died. Or maybe this is what I actually thought of saying. I thought maybe saying, like, yeah, Americans always shit on bridges. It's good luck. But, like, he wasn't going to believe anything. So eventually, I just said, like, yes. I shit my pants. And this is the part that I'll never forget. It was so fucking nice. He reached into his pocket, and he pulled out a handkerchief. Yeah, it was an embroidered handkerchief. I don't remember the guy's name. I wish I remembered his name. All I remember was the initials. We're on the handkerchief. It was ELM. And he just goes, I've been there, man. Gave me this handkerchief. It was so nice. It was so kind. On a human level, that was the nicest thing anyone's ever. I was like getting choked up almost. I was like, dude, after I made fun of you for like an hour straight about being Scottish, I was like tears were welling in my eyes as I reached in there and just started scooping. Just scooping these chunks. These Twix travel size chunks of diarrhea. And then I released it into the wind. And it sailed away like that feather at the end of Forrest Gump.
So yeah, that was a Sydney Harbour Bridge joke. This was the first bit. I guess like a month of me doing that bit, it became my closer. That's how strong it was right away. It tortured me. I couldn't find an ending for it. It could not find an ending for it, and it tortured me. I would throw literal temper tantrums. I would go to the main room, and I'd throw chairs around. I would fucking get off stage, and I'd be like, fuck. And everybody was like, dude, that was amazing. I was like, no, it doesn't wrap up right. And I had to search and search and search for it until I finally T-Bow's calling me. Until I finally got an ending, and then it felt so good. It felt so good to struggle through something and make it good, to make it work. It just feels awesome as a comedian. So this guy, that manager, I submitted for a half-hour special for Comedy Central. It's the only time I submitted for it. It was a couple years ago. I guess right before I recorded this. And they didn't take me, but her name was Toni Magon, from Comedy Central. She had a talk with me. My manager set it up. And she was going to give me feedback on my half-hour submission. And they were really cool about it. It wasn't what I used to get, which was like, oh, you're too green, or we don't like this, or we think this is bad. It wasn't like that at all. The main note she had, she told me, she goes, one, we're only taking 12 people this year instead of 20, I think, which they normally do. And she goes, and we've already got 8 that we sort of promised from last year. So we're down to like 4 people, really. And she goes, if we took 16 or 20, we'd be giving you a half-hour special. It was really complimentary and nice. And she goes, but these other people, of the 4 spots left over, or 8 spots left over, whatever it was, she goes, these other people are more, they've already gotten our notes. They're closer to being able to what we think to be able to record it. And she goes, and you just have some stuff you got to worry about. And for this bit, she got to this Sydney Harbor Bridge joke. And she goes, first of all, and my manager's on the other line. And she goes, first of all, let me just tell you, we loved it. Us and everybody at the office were dying laughing. We just loved it. And I remember thinking, like, I didn't want to say anything, but I was thinking, like, can you hear that, manager? Can you hear what she's saying? This bit you thought was just a poopy joke was just beneath me. Can you hear what she's saying? Where's my apology? I never got it. But she said, the main note was, she said, it's just too long. She goes, we have 7-minute block breaks, commercial breaks, and you can't do something. You can't do that 13-minute long bit. And I was like, well, what about Ralphie? Like, what does Ralphie May do? He has long bits. And she goes, yeah, he cuts them. He cuts them down into 7-minute chunks. And she goes, this is what I really appreciated. I really, really appreciated this. She goes, I'm not telling you what to cut out of this. Because there's no part that I'm like, well, this doesn't play, that doesn't play. She goes, I'm not telling you what to cut out of it. I'm just saying you've got to lose 6 minutes. Which to me is such a pure way of looking at stand-up. Where it's like, look, we've got these commercials, but I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you what I think is better or worse about your act. That's for you to do. But we have a 7-minute block break. And man, I wish they had a way to around that. Because there's some bits that go longer than 7 minutes. And that's just how they naturally evolve. And to have this side idea in there of like, well, they can only be 7 minutes. Like, that has nothing to do with the purity of the art form. They need a way around that. HBO specials don't need that. They need a way around it. All right, so that's pretty much it. Here's my exit, and then that'll be the episode.
You guys, I'm done. Thank you very much, everybody. You guys were an absolutely, absolutely awesome crowd. I cannot do this without you. So thank you very much for coming. With crowds like this, I would do this for free. Have a good night. If you want to say hi afterwards, I'll be out here. Come say hi, take a picture. Good night, everybody.
So that's it. That's my special. My CD, my first recording, Revenge for the Holocaust. A couple special thanks I should give out. One, Kevin Christie for making the artwork. The artwork is sick. If you want to get the physical copy of the CD, you can go to my merch site on my website, my merch page at arithegreat.com, and you can get a physical copy, or I'll have some on my live shows. So yeah, he made the artwork. It was just a riff we were doing. We were fucking around on the driving, going from I think that place in Los Feliz, that gyro place, going back to Kevin's house, and we were just like, what if I was a spider and I was hunting a fly, but the fly looked like Hitler? And he was like, yeah, I can make that. Yeah, that's what I wanted later. And then my only request was, hey, make it yellow because I think it should stand out on iTunes. Also, special thanks to to who? Justin Edbrook for helping me arrange everything. He's my agent and my friend, and he helped me arrange the guy who recorded it and the guy who edited it and helped me put it together and deal with CD Baby and stuff. And also, last but not least, maybe the biggest thanks, depression. Actually, that helped me more with the special than with the CD. And the Comedy Store, obviously, where I developed and thought of most of these jokes. Without the Comedy Store, I'm nothing as a comic. I got the title, obviously, from that bit about throwing the boogers on cars. I thought it went well as a title for my CD and pretty much overall as what I am. I took this auteur class in college about filmmakers, and we had to do this scene where we had to analyze this thing. We had to analyze like an act in a movie. Not an act, excuse me. Just a scene. And we had to say what the scene meant overall. Like, let's say it'd be like, I don't know, the maze scene at the end of The Shining. So we had to say what that would have to do with what that meant in terms of like what he was trying to tell you with the scene, the director, and also what it meant in relation to the entire movie, and then also what it meant in terms of the author, the director in that case, their entire body of work, all their movies. It was actually a bad moment for me because I wrote it on something and then I read my teacher's book. It was like not mandatory reading, and he had written something about the same scene, but he had done it so much more in depth and less space, less words to make more details. And I was like, oh, I fucking suck. He had to have a talk with me. And Dr. Kolker, Robert Kolker, Kolker. He was great. He was a film teacher and one of my favorites, probably my favorite in all of college. And took him numerous times, just looked to see what he was teaching and then took it. And he goes, Ari, don't get upset. If I was impressed by this, if you made me think of things I haven't thought of, then you'd be teaching the class. You're a student. Relax, man. You're doing great. It was really frustrating. But so Revenge for the Holocaust, obviously it's from that bit, so it's a line from the CD. But then also, I am Revenge for the Holocaust. This is what Hitler would not have wanted. A segregated Jew who is talking about these things and just being part of society. Just talking about regular, dirty, clean, just regular societal issues and just blending in. I think that's the worst thing he would have wanted. And so in terms of that, the CD is not just... The CD is Revenge for the Holocaust, but really I'm Revenge for the Holocaust, and that's kind of why I titled it that. That's why I really liked it. My other regret is that I don't know if I said a regret yet. My regret is that I didn't give everyone in that audience. I thought about it later, but I wanted to get everybody's email address so I could send them all a free copy of it, because really I meant that, where I'm like, when I say I can't do it without you, I really mean I can't do it without a good crowd. When I said in the beginning, like, oh, this is the crowd, it's like those people in that crowd enabled me to do that CD in such a good way. You can't separate the laughs from a comic. Everyone wants to do that. Like, I just do it in front of a brick wall or in front of nobody. Or they're like, don't worry about the setup of the room. It's the jokes that'll play. I'm like, no. We don't do good jokes if there's not a crowd laughing at us. We don't perform well. So you can cut in laughter all you want, but if we're not performing well, it won't look good. You've got to have a good room set up to record stand-up comedy. And I wish I would have been able to tell everybody there that here, give me your email address and I'll just send you a free CD. I did mean that about I would do it for free. The first time I ever went to the Denver Comedy Works, I think it might have been the first time I opened for Joe Rogan on the road. It was either there or Boston. I have trouble remembering now. The old Faneuil Hall, the Comedy Connection. But I think it was Denver. And man, I was killing. That room is just amazing. And I had never really gotten it. So when I got this good room, I was like, fuck yeah. And I just unloaded on these crowds. And at the end of the week, Wendy, the owner, one of the few honest owners in comedy, she would do this thing where Rogan would sell out. So, you know, let's say there's 300 tickets. She goes, okay, I got to give you your, let's say you had an 80% split. I don't know what it was. Let's say it was 80% split times 300. She should go, here, this is exactly what you get. I don't know the math on that. 24,000, 2,400, whatever it is. Oh, I don't know what tickets are. But then what would happen is she would have some no-shows and people wouldn't come. So after me and Duncan went on, she would allow people to come in if those tickets weren't taken yet. She goes, fuck it, they're probably not going to come. And she'd resell to people on the waiting list. and they could see Rogan do an hour. So she could have easily gotten away with just paying him for a sellout. But what she would do is say, well, we sold 20 extra tickets on top of a sellout, so let's do a split with that too. She could have easily gotten away with it. She always can. But she went overboard and said, no, this is what we agreed on. We sold this many tickets. I know we only have 300, but we sold 320 tickets. So your 80% is of the 320. Real honest. But at the end of that first week that I worked with Rogan, so she was coming by and hanging out in the green room a lot of times. And at the end, she was there, and she goes, oh, come see me in my office? And I was like, why? And she was like, oh, I got to pay you. And I remember really thinking, I had never done fucking four or five shows of that much fun with those kind of explosive crowds in my life before. I don't think I had done one show like that, let alone five. And I remember really thinking, going like, oh, what? I get paid for this? Like, that's the last thing. I had a great time. That's a 100% win for me. And I didn't even know I got – I mean, I guess I realized I got paid. I just didn't think about it because I was having such a good time. So really, when I set out with crowds like this, I would do it for free. I mean, don't tell fucking comedy club bookers that, but it's true. Man, great crowds, I'll just go for free. Now, you might not get me on a flight for free, but fucking great crowds are all the payment we really want. So you lose sight of that, which a lot of comics do. So that's the album, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. Share it with friends. Tell them, hey, there's an album on here with some notes in it. I'm going to do the same thing with Rogan, but more in depth, but not show his special, but just have a companion piece before his special airs on Comedy Central in, I think, February. I don't know. Just ask him questions about how the bits originated and stuff like that, where certain taglines came from and how he had to struggle through bits. I think it'd be interesting as a comedy fan to get details like that. So that's it. Please subscribe to The Skeptic Tank. It won't usually be comedy CDs, but it's a fun and in-depth discussion on a topic. I think you guys, the ones who already are subscribed, you guys do like it. Share it. Let it grow. All right, you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, episode nothing. Revenge for the Holocaust. Over and out.